This is The Good Die Young, the podcast where we deep dive into the greatest television you barely saw. I'm your host, Les Weiler. Join me as I take you through what made these shows too pretty to live. This is The Good Die Young. Season 1, The Middleman. All right. Welcome back to The Good Die Young, The Middleman, where we're going through each episode of The Middleman TV series in as much detail as you can bear. My name's Les, and I'm sitting here with Jason Scalise.
Hi.
Good friend of mine. Thanks for being here, man. When I went out looking for people to co-host who had seen episodes of The Middleman, it was a short list. I put a blast out on my Facebook of which of my friends have seen it and liked it. Which, that's one circle. Nobody's seen it that didn't like it, from what I can tell. But I was really glad when you commented on there that yeah, you'd seen it and it's good.
Yeah, I watched the whole series a few years ago with some friends, and they were big fans. And I just love the humor and it just the goofiness and the the creativity as well.
Did you read comics as a kid?
I read a little bit. I was not big into comic books, but I read some Flash and some X-Men and just sort of what I came across here and there.
Otherwise, sci-fi stuff, do you have a favorite? Star Wars, Star Trek?
Oh, I guess Star Wars. I grew up with Star Trek, the original series, but I've always liked sci-fi, and Ender's Game was a big one, and Men in Black later on, and you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's that Men in Black vibe is kind of part of what charmed me about Middleman. Just that goofy, there's this whole world happening that you're just not noticing. Like, there's just aliens everywhere and weird stuff.
The world is really crazy and silly.
Yeah. I think Middleman even expressly says it at some point that, like, no, everything's real. Like, everything you've ever heard of is real. So, the episode that we're going to talk about is episode 10 in the series, The Vampiric Puppet Lamentation. Now, and you'd specifically pointed this one out as one of your favorites.
Yes. I was looking for one to sort of what kind of jumped out at me as a favorite. And I am a big fan of Gothic horror and Dracula. And this just hit a lot of great notes and was just a lot of fun for somebody who's interested in horror movies and that sort of thing.
So it starts out, the beginning of the episode, of course, in a illegal sublet with two photogenic artists. So you have Wendy Watson talking with Lacey, and Lacey's distracted because she's had a sex dream about Pip, who is their odious son of, or I guess their landlord. His dad owns the building.
I had a sex dream about Pip. Could you rewind that? Because it sounded like you said you dreamt you were knocking boots with a malignant nematode son of our building owner who copied my artwork and tried to pass it off as his own.
That's just it. And he was kind of... I'm still a little dizzy.
And I love just the absolute gross out of like, you had a sex dream about Pip, because they've already set Pip up by this point as being horrible. And they go ahead and cut to Lacey's dream, which is kind of a fogged out, can't quite see who it is, except that Pip is clearly wearing the Eisenhower jacket and the Middleman outfit. And so obviously Lacey's having a sex dream about Middleman.
And you've got the sort of romance novel, wind blowing the hair.
And the fog and everything. Uh-huh. And so... they're getting ready to go to a party, and I think they're already setting up. And at this point, they've already let in with nobody knows where Noser is, or nobody's seen Noser,
which is odd because he's such a staple of every episode when she enters the building.
Yeah. I mean, really, Noser's job is to be there in the scene.
Hey, have you seen Noser?
No, sir.
Joe, I'm serious. He's not in the hallway. Anvil hasn't seen him in forever. No one knows where he is.
Hey, am I my Noser's keeper?
So they go to this party, and Wendy gets pulled away by a friend of theirs, or a associate of theirs, who they're clearly mocking, to do a tarot reading. And I love this show for the repeated lines. There's always a kismet moment where someone says the same phrase. And for Lacey in this episode, it's...
Tarot cards are for the spiritually vulnerable and intellectually weak.
And she just rattles that off. Like, I love how, like, otherwise hippie chick Lacey can seem sometimes, but then occasionally she's this spoken word confrontational artist. She speaks, she confronts art. Wendy sits down for a tarot reading that she clearly doesn't believe in, and this girl's giving her the worst flaky reading ever. I think she brings up long-term relationship,
right,
which is a plot point from the pilot.
Very vague sort of stuff that you would expect somebody who didn't know.
Yeah, and just gets led down the wrong path every time. Like, oh, you're in a relationship? That's going to last a while. No, he just dumped me. Oh, it could mean that too. Like, I love her flip-flops on all of it. And then out of nowhere, she gets possessed. And suddenly the tarot card, I always love this trope in movies when the tarot card is just suddenly a different image or a specific image that can't be in the deck. And so she holds up and it's Noser with his arms missing. And she says in, I'm assuming Latin, but she rattles off in some other tongue.
You know, I didn't even notice.
That something Noser and then growls out some other words and...
Giovane Noser, Tayer. Ogni parte del tuo corpo per salvarti.
What?
And Wendy's like, I don't understand you.
Un Noser, Cooper Chakra.
English woman?
Your Noser will be rent limb from limb to save you.
And I love Wendy's English woman. Like, it's definitely a world where you can look at a monster and go, oh, come on.
Oh, and working with the middleman, I'm sure, has given her a little bit of that.
Yeah, there's just a, like, I don't have time for this. And then the girl repeats it, young Noser will be rent limb from limb to save you. Which Wendy takes to mean that Noser's gonna die to save her.
Noser never showed up for the party. He still hasn't come in to drink our coffee. He's officially MIA.
He's a grown boy. What's the big...
Jamie, the tarot girl, she told me he was gonna die, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Go to work. I'll find Noser.
Thanks, Lise.
Wendy goes off to work, and Lacey goes off to find Noser. I love that, I think it's the only time we see Noser's roommate, but Noser has a roommate, Anvil, who is about to just absolutely kill Pip, because... Pip has been going around the building looking for Noser as well and insulting everybody because he's Pip. And of course, Pip's looking for Noser because he owes him 3 months' rent. Just as Anvil's about to clobber Pip, I think what he calls him is Butter Chop. It's the most nonsense insult I've heard thrown at somebody. Lacey and Pip talk about Noser being missing, and immediately Pip rattles off the kismet line.
Tarot's for the spiritually vulnerable and intellectually weak.
It sure is.
And you can see Lacey bond with him but not want to.
And she gets sort of a uh-oh moment.
With Pip and Lacey both looking for Noser, because Pip won't let her leave at this point. She's getting more results than him.
You're not going anywhere.
I have to find Noser.
I do too. And until I get my rent money, you're getting more than you bargained for. I'm your partner.
In the meantime, Dubby is back at headquarters, and she's getting a lowdown on vampires. Because they're getting out stakes, they're getting out hammers, and just like so many of the monsters, like the zombies, I love that Dubby's excited about this, of like, tell me we are fighting vampires. And that the middleman's like, oh, I hope not. I mean, middleman killed the last vampire.
And he notes that vampires have been responsible for the death of more middlemen than ever.
Yeah, than any other single thing. She asks how many? Two. Like, I love that nothing's ever, like, vampires are the only thing that's ever killed a middleman twice, or killed two of them. Otherwise, middlemen have eradicated vampires. I like the occasions where monsters come up. I mean, all the monsters are always real. Like, oh, no, that's a thing. But occasionally, it's like, oh, yeah, no, we wiped that off. Like, middleman's already fought this and beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, the hints that this organization is ancient and good at its job is hysterical to me. Because too often in shows, like, the nerd super organization like this is hearts in the right place, but they're, like, woefully inept. Or they're underfunded, or middleman does not have that problem. They've got a middle jet. It's right above the middle boat. Kind of shop you think they're running here.
They've even got a cure for vampirism.
Yes, that's right. They've even got a virus cure for vampirism. Oh, the Montesi formula.
Oh, you are not going anywhere without a dose of the Montesi formula.
While they're at headquarters, Wendy asks if she can use the Hadar to find Noser, and she hints that Lacey had a sex dream about Pip, which immediately gets under the middleman's skin.
I can't lie, Wendy. This Pip business bothers me. The thought of her dating that thievish, entitled ne'er-do-well, it just smokes my skillet.
Which is just another classic middleman moment. All of MM's expletives and phrases are always so good. So what middleman and Wendy have to do as the A-plot in this episode is go to an auction and buy all of Vlad the Impaler's belongings. They're having this massive sale of Vlad the Impaler's stuff. And it's everything from a door hinge down to the crux of the episode, his treasured puppet. Because the only thing he loved more than drinking the blood of his enemies was puppets. And so they've got Vladdy, ventriloquist dummy of Vlad, which looks a whole lot like a dressed up Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah.
Ventriloquist dummy to me. They sit through this entire auction and try to buy everything. And at the very end, they pull up the last item, which is the puppet. We see the auctioneer put the puppet on and immediately get possessed. And everybody thinks he's doing a bit because the puppet turns around and goes,
"Dare you laugh at me? An eternal night of blood shall soon be upon you."
This is classic setup. The villain's off to bring about some kind of horrible night. Middleman and Dubby have to then go chase him down. I think Middleman's expletive at this moment is Bram Stoker's widow, Dubby. So they go off and find a previous owner of Vladdy, the appropriately named Renfield. My favorite thing about the Renfield bit, because they have to go find this guy in an insane asylum after finding footage of him putting the puppet on.
At a kid's show.
And in that, I think he actually bites the other newscaster.
Yes.
And we don't see what happens yet to people that get bit, but I love that they can spread puppet vampirism. Also, I love that the puppet vampires can change.
Yeah.
When the auctioneer runs out of the auction house and escapes, they think they've got him cornered, and the puppet on his hand turns into a bat and flies off, dragging him like a balloon.
It's just such a perfect gag.
Yeah.
Because what would a puppet vampire do but turn into a puppet bat?
And I think they even mentioned later, like, why didn't he burst into flame when he went out into the sun? Like, well, he's wood and he's covered in shellac. Like, I love the little logic moments or illogic, however you want to look at it.
Like, how do we explain this?
Yes. I feel like these were definitely people that grew up, like, having to help out Marvel Comics, hand wave some stuff away. Like, oh, that's not a problem because off scene, this probably happened. So the only thing we know already at this point, the only thing that kills vampires is the purest Carpathian wood. And once again, like everything in Middleman, phrasing's important. So later on, when someone says purest Carpathian wood, other people in the room stop and go, what? Stuff like that makes the writing on this show keep every episode clipping through the plot really quickly.
And it also makes it memorable.
The show never feels like it's just stitched together out of Easter eggs. It just happens to contain a lot of Easter eggs. But I never feel like I'm just being walked through a lot of winks and nods. Like, when someone's named Renfield, they don't pause and wink at the camera for it or anything. Like, they just move on. After watching the footage of Renfield, they find out where he is now committed, because they say the name of the illness that he has now, but it's just this ridiculous compound psych term.
He now suffers from a rare condition called acute borderline hypercerebral dysplasia. It's destroyed his ability to tell where he stops and where the horrific machinations of his deranged psyche begin.
If your shrink ever describes anything wrong with you like that, leave. Just leave that hospital.
That is a horror movie trick.
Yes. Yes. And so Middleman and Dubby try to ask the guy some questions about Vladdy, and it's almost like he wants to respond but can't until Middleman figures this out.
It's okay, Wendy.
What are you doing?
There's only one way to speak to an insane ventriloquist.
I love that. The middleman goes, oh, and he pulls a Sharpie that he's just got in his pocket and draws googly eyes on his hand and proceeds to have the rest of the conversation out of, like, handy.
And this is my favorite scene in the whole episode. When I was looking for episodes, I saw that clip and I'm like, I know I have to do this one, because that's just, again, a perfect gag. Perfect silly gag.
Even when W wants to ask a follow-up question and he won't answer her until she finally holds her hand up and says something, And then the guy gets excited, giving him the rest of the info, and jumps on the bed with him and throws his arm around Dubby so that he can have his hand between the two of them. It's one of the weirder, most awkward. And like you can see Wendy just getting more and like, oh, God.
And she even uses a weird high-pitched puppet voice.
Yes, yes.
Their souls were damned into the wood for all time. Unless.
Unless what?
I think Middleman actually manages to do it without moving his lips. Like he's actually pretty good at it. But yeah, I love that they use the high-pitched puppet voice and everything. They find out what Vladdy's looking for. And Vladdy's trying to find Elizabeth Rousseau, who is, or rather the puppet version, Lizzie. The puppet version of Vlad the Impaler's wife. And they were married, and then they were killed by a mob of townspeople, and their blood ran into the puppets and cursed the wood forever. Once again, it's just a show made up of my favorite parts of other stuff, because that's such a great curse. It's
ridiculous and awesome. Yeah.
And that they can free themselves by being worn by two people who also are in love with each other, and then marrying the puppets have to then get married.
That just brings it into a perfect circle. Yes.
Middleman's always got this fun monster of the week, but there are character arcs and things do happen. Like Wendy learns things and they do find things out. Lacey and Middleman's love affair or non-affair, I think, is one of the strongest kind of through lines of the whole show. And it comes up again here in an actual provable way, because the fact that Middleman and Lacey genuinely love each other is the only reason why this can actually work. And so I kind of enjoy that watching the episode later of like, Wendy can't even really argue this. It's not that your boss and your roommate have like a crush on each other or whatever.
It's not just tension. Yeah. It's been pretty much established in the show that they love each other.
They're off to track down Lizzie. Well, they don't have to track down Lizzie because a middleman purchased that doll. And so they've got Lizzie.
Are you telling me the puppet bride of Vlad the Impaler is right there at HQ?
Yeah, middleman bought her in 1895. Should be in the fifth floor archive.
And so middleman, Dubby, they're off doing that, looking for vampires. In the meantime, Lacey and Pip have come across Joe Niney, who is another great bit character from the show. I think the only things hinted at in his backstory are that he makes phallic sculptures. Lacey compliments one to kind of get some info out of him. Which, of course, is called Obelisk at Dawn. What else would you name a penis sculpture? And he has, we find out in another episode, we find out that Joe Niney's taken the bar like 16 or 17 times. Joe Niney admits that, I love the way he tells it, tells Lacey, I'll tell you what I told Pip. No, I haven't seen Noser. Now I'll tell you the truth.
The cool thing is that Lacey and Pip have a bet going that Lacey wants to be positive towards people and encourage them to tell her things, whereas Pip just insults them and she demonstrates how she can get the information where he can't.
Yes, yeah, and it works. But of course, Pip is standing nearby and hears Joe Niney talk about like what an entitled tool Pip is and how horrible of a person, and it doesn't humanize Pip, but you can see it start to get to him a little bit. Which is the closest to humanizing Pip that you really get. Because, yeah, I think Lacey even asked, like, well, when you talked to Joe Niney, did you make fun of his glasses? Well, yeah. Like, duh, of course.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So you find out that Pip's dad gives Pip money to do building security surveillance. And Pip just keeps the money and gives Joe Niney a break on his rent. So unbeknownst to all the other tenants of the building, Joe Niney has this place wired like Sliver and is watching all of them. Which I think is full on the creepiest thing about Joe Niney as a character. And they never touch on that again. But it bothered me after the first time I heard it was like, wait. So Joe Niney's got cameras in all the hallways and stuff.
There's more to this illegal sublet than you first know.
Yeah. How much revenue exactly is this sublet generating? So Joe Niney gives them the tape and they see Noser outside in front of the building talking to an Eastern European woman. She opens up the trunk of her car and gives him a shiny silver briefcase. And so when Lacey shows Dubby or tells Dubby about the footage, Wendy says, well, if 80s action movies have taught us anything, it's that no one of Eastern European descent handing you a shiny metal briefcase is good. So they're sure that Noser is in trouble or is up to his neck in something. Dubby actually uses the Hadar on a personal move, which I don't think we've seen before. But she, of course, immediately finds out who the woman is. It's Irina Dubrovka, or Dubrovna, which is one of the few names in this show that is not a Dracula reference in this episode. We had to look her up because I'm not familiar enough with Cat People to have known that name offhand, but she's the lead character in Cat People, which, go track that down if you've not. That was a fun rabbit hole to go down. I had forgotten about that movie. The Hadar finds out the address, and they go see Irina. Well, Pip and Lacey go see Irina. Of course, Pip is still Pip, so he almost blows the whole deal, and then does a really nice talk about yourself in third person kind of thing, where he says, "Oh no, I'm Joe 90, or I'm Noser's best friend."
He even gets all choked up and sort of really plays it for all it's worth.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just Noser's my best friend, and he's in really big trouble with his entitled tool of a landlord.
Beep.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Well, he's his entitled tool of a landlord. And I love that this woman has not known Noser in years. And even she still knows about Pip. Once again, everything in Noser's backstory is amazing and so weird. You never see him play guitar. Actually, in the interview we did for the show with Tree Adams that did the music for Middleman, I asked him about, was there ever a thought to do Noser's concept album or to do Tyler Ford's album? And he said, no, I think once you do hear Noser play, and I could not remember for the life of me in the interview when he was talking about, like, when do I ever see Noser actually play that guitar? And Adam said, no, I remember one time I got asked to do like a bunch of flourish stuff and some flamenco guitar. It's this episode.
He's got the talent of a god. His family hired me to tutor him. By age 5, he was writing his own material. By age 6, he humiliated all of the great masters. It was marvelous. We saw the world. One royal palace at a time. Of course, by then, I had nothing to teach the boy.
And she starts talking about how she, not what she trained him in, but that she trained him from when he was a child.
He's a master of his instrument.
Yes, master of his instrument. And that he was writing his own material in his life. And the whole time she's talking, there's flamenco guitar and like wailing guitar solos and blues and stuff. And I love that that's the actual composer of all the rest of the score music. That's Tree Adams. He also wrote Palomino, the song that Middleman listens to in the first episode. He really went all out on the music for this show. Really good composer. I love that they just went ahead and kind of throw in these subtle hints that like
lead you in that direction.
Yeah. So that at least in Tree's mind, when he was asked to play that stuff, it was intended that that's Noser playing. So we finally find out at the very end of Irina's story what Noser's instrument is, and it's ventriloquism, which just cracks Pip up like best news Pip's ever gotten. Simultaneously, this just dovetails the A plot and B plot together, which is another great thing that Middleman manages to do a lot. Have whatever Lacey and Noser are doing, or Lacey and Pip in this case, or whoever's running the B plot, it always seems to dovetail kind of nicely into what's happening in the main plot, because Dubby and the Middleman have gone to a convention center where they're going to try to track down Lizzie and Vladdy.
And I think they tracked the auctioneer there with the Middleman's watch.
Besides, we don't even know where Vladdy and Lizzie went. Oh, you slipped in the middle watch to track them. Very nice.
They don't know exactly where they're going.
Yes. They're not sure how they're going to find him. And I love his subtle like, well, that's why I put my watch on him. Middleman's always on it. And of course, they give him the vaccine, the Montesi vaccine, and he's got a huge Band-Aid on the side of his neck for the whole rest of the thing. I think he plays it off to Lacey later as I cut myself shaving. And so everybody shows up at the convention center at the same time.
And there's a little bit about, well, it should be easy to find Vladdy and Lizzie because, you know, somebody with these puppets are going to stand out. And then they look at the sign and it's World Ventriloquism Championship.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're thinking like, how hard is it going to be to find a nut job with two? Like, oh, yes. And it's the McFarland and Gray Convention Center. Middleman, I feel like had met Pip before in the series. I don't think they actually had been introduced, but I know they've been in a room together because of the plagiarism episode.
Right. And he even mentions that as he doesn't want a plagiarist,
yes,
dating Lacey. Of course, you can see the little bit of jealousy there.
So while they're all standing there talking, I love Pip's absolutely awkward handshake. Like, middleman puts out his hand to shake Pip's hand, and Pip fist bumps the palm of his hand from the side and goes, boop.
Boop.
It's one of the lamest, like, oh, you hate that guy immediately. Like, uh-huh. There's nothing.
Douchebag. Immediate douchebag.
Yeah, just douchebag. Of course, Pip realizes that they're at a world ventriloquist competition to see Noser, and realizes that, like, Noser's not a guitar god. He's a ventriloquist. And Pip's first reaction is, I have to go home and get my camera. And he turns around and is gone.
Oh, this is way too good to be true. Noser doesn't play guitar. He's a ventriloquist. I gotta go home and get my camera.
And so now we're down to really just the core. We've got middleman and Dubby. Dubby turns around and immediately sees the auctioneer and the puppets. So they go off into the crowd. Dubby tells Lacey, you've got to find Noser and get him out of here. Of course, Lacey almost immediately gets kind of bamboozled by whoever's wearing Vlad at this point, and lured to go become Lizzie.
Excuse me, young pretty girl. I know where Noser is.
Aw, he's cute. What's his name?
Vladdy.
Where's Noser, Vladdy?
Follow me. I'll take you.
Lacey gets held hostage, basically, by her own hand, which is just a wonderful Blazing Saddles-ish kind of moment, in order to get Middleman to put the other puppet on, because Vladdy bit Middleman. Whenever a vampire bites you, he gets all your memories, and so Vladdy knows that Middleman truly loves Lacey. I love that they managed to, even in this episode, explain that this is how the puppet knew to
right.
put them
because
together.
Because we have to make it make sense.
Yes, obviously, with vampire puppets, you've got to dot your I's and cross your T's.
But it really does make it better. Like, yeah. It really does make it more interesting and exciting.
That there's hardly ever dropped threads in this show. So they're going to have a true love ceremony. Vladdy and Lizzie, they've used all the, there's no stakes. Vlad's that Wendy has, she doesn't have any way to defeat them right now. Vladdy's bit a ton of other puppets. They don't show how this works, but I just, the fact that there's a puppet army behind her, which.
and she even says there are puppet minions behind me, aren't there?
And she turns around and of course it's all just ventriloquists that are kind of catatonic and being led around by these possessed puppets. I think she manages to smack one in the face and it spins its whole head around because right. It's a ventriloquist dummy.
And then she defeats the bunny puppet and we get our Wilhelm scream.
Where am I?
Hang back and you'll be cool.
That's right. That's right. If you don't know what the Wilhelm scream is, do you want to explain?
It's a sound effect, a classic sound effect that I'm sure you've heard in many different action movies throughout the years. And it's described something a bit like scream with tension or something like that. And it is the scream that you hear when somebody falls off a cliff or gets killed in some fantastic way.
It's one of those sounds where you don't think a scream would be identifiable, but you've heard this.
Right. You don't notice it necessarily, but it's in so many movies that it's very recognizable.
Yeah, and now it's its own thing. Like, I'm so glad that Middleman made use of it, because of course you'd have to. Basically, just everything's gone wrong at this point. We're definitely at the darkest hour. It looks like the villains are going to win. They find a minister who's going to marry them. The puppets are, I think, Middleman hangs the ring between little Vladdy's hook nose and his lip and gets the ring on Lacey's finger. They go through with the ceremony. Both puppets turn into Middleman and Lacey puppets on their
hands.
That
was one of the most exciting parts for me.
Yes.
Was them switching places with.
It's always fun to see how writers or showrunners are going to extrapolate out how these things work. Okay, so you transmute bodies, but how does that, you know, how's that going to work? Is Middleman and Lacey just going to pass out on the floor? I love that they chose to go with, no, they're going to turn into puppets, and Vladdy and Elizabeth Rousseau, or Big Vlad and Elizabeth Rousseau are going to become real. I mean, I assume that they just had this ready to go. They had to have made those puppets off those people, because the guy for Vlad is perfect. That puppet looks just like a puppet of that goofy guy.
He's got those really pronounced facial features and everything.
Yeah, the nose, the facial hair, all of it. Like, he looks like a fake mask of a person. It's great. just as they turn around and start to give this huge, obviously about to bring about an eternal night of blood kind of speech, Dubby steps in and drops her just great action hero line of you give love a bad name. And then she fires what are, I must admit, the most penis looking, I don't know if they were trying to carve arrowheads into the stakes that she uses or what, but there's a moment there, they just look weird. They just look weird. And she has found these
maybe
stakes.
Joe 90,
maybe Joe 90. Maybe Joe 90 made these for her. Yes. But the way she found these stakes was by finding Noser. I love Noser's explanation for why he's even here.
Look, I sank all my money into my concept album. I came out of retirement to do this, to pay the rent and finish my record. And young Noser and I are taking the stage.
Noser, if you don't leave immediately, you're gonna... Wait, young Noser?
Young Noser will be rent limb from limb to save you.
Young Noser is my dummy.
He sunk all his money into his concept album.
He needs the money.
And he's come out of retirement to win this ventriloquist contest. In the course of talking to Noser, he says, look, me and young Noser got to get on stage. And too often shows will do stuff like someone would say young Noser and no one would catch that three or four times. Mm-hmm. And they just still continue thinking that Noser's going to get killed. I love that Dubby catches it immediately. Like, did you say young Noser?
Because, again, that's the important way of phrasing.
Yes. Yes. Because the way the tarot thing was, young Noser will be rent limb from limb to save you. Then in the course of talking, Noser says, yes, young Noser was carved out of, I think she says, purest Carpathian wood. And Noser says, that's a weird turn of phrase. That's what my ventriloquist teacher always used to say. She carved it herself. Yeah. So young Noser, Noser's ventriloquist dummy, which is literally mini-me of Noser, is made of purest Carpathian wood. And so Dubby tears both arms off, and that's what becomes the very phallic arrows. At the very end of the episode, we get to see a little bit of footage before Lacey takes the tape off of Pip. We get to see a little bit of footage of Noser's act.
So, young Noser, I can't help but notice you look a little different. Why don't you tell the nice people out here what happened to your arms?
True to form, just like in the hallway, just like Stump the Band, just like everywhere else, he never plays. His ventriloquist act does not require his dummy to speak. His entire ventriloquist act is silent and based on side eye. It's great. It's just as good as, like, you never have to hear him play. He's just legendary. It had to have been fun, I would think, to have a character that is just the Fonz.
Right.
I mean, just with no proof, just everyone accepts it.
How cool he is.
Yeah, just the coolest. Lacey, of course, as everybody else in the show has so far, once the puppet's gone, has no memory of how they got there. Because we've had a whole series of people in the episode looking up and going, "How? Where am I?" Because the puppet's off to another host now. They tell Pip and everybody, "Oh, Lacey just fainted," and just kind of play it off. Of course, Dubby now understands that was true love, and so in the aftermath of the episode, we've got a Noser's return party happening, which Lacey does admit that she had gotten. Well, we see Lacey get the videotape away from Pip. Pip has videotaped that ventriloquist thing and is going to hold it over Noser. And Lacey kisses him and gets the tape or the disc. Later on at the party, at Noser's return party, Pip is trying to tell this story to Joe 90 of like, no, he's a ventriloquist. I have proof.
I'm telling you, he's a ventriloquist. I have everything on camera. And where's the tape? Lacey stole it.
You actually expect me to believe someone as pure-hearted and loving as Lacey could outmanipulate someone as conniving and evil-hearted as you?
She distracted me. With a kiss.
Yeah, this story's getting easier and easier to believe.
Hey!
And it's all true. And even Dubby looks over like, oh, yeah, that's a... God, you kissed him, didn't you? And that Lacey says flat out, like, yeah, but it dispelled any attraction. And then they cut to the sex dream that Lacey had right before the party, which is no longer about Pip. It's just middleman. Right. And so kind of you're left with all is right with the world, even though they can't be together. Then I believe right after that, the final scene of the entire episode, and they've done this once before, the cursed tuba one, where middleman basically has to tell Lacey, we can't date, I can't do this. Right. That episode ends on a long shot of Wendy. just standing there, and she's just sad, and you can kind of just see it clicking for her that this job has a burden. I won't be able to have a normal life. And this episode kind of gets the opposite side of that. Says something about like,
so you and my best friend, true love.
And I love Middleman's answer.
She's not the only woman I love. Good work today, Dubby.
There's another woman I love.
Yeah. And so at the end of the episode, it's Middleman literally doing the turning the lights off and just standing there alone.
And, you know, he has that sort of lone cowboy thing, and he displayed that also when he was, I think earlier on in the episode, he was telling Wendy that she may have to go it alone.
Yeah.
He may not make it. And then
He's compromised with the bite.
Right. Yeah. And right before he puts on the Vladdy puppet, he tells her again, you know, I thought this might happen. You might have to go on without me.
Yeah. And of course, the classic movie that he loves is Ride Lonesome, and which is what Lacey followed him to in their previous date. And I think in this episode, Lacey even looks at him as they're kind of parting ways, with her not really remembering they just got married. How did I get this ring? Mm-hmm. But she looks at Middleman and says, Ride Lonesome, huh? So I love Middleman and Lacey's bond and this unrequited,
it's really sweet
thing that they've always got going. I've got to go back and mention one of my favorite unanswered things in this entire episode. When the Middleman is trying to quiz Dubby on what to do for vampires, I don't know if we mentioned this earlier, he goes down a list, and of course she's just insulted, like, well, I know all these things. I know about vampires. I've read all these comics.
She even mentions an actual Dracula comic.
Yes, yeah, yeah. She mentions Jerry Ordway's Dracula comic. Yeah. But Middleman's last question that they cut off and you don't get the answer to is, if a vampire offers you soup, I'm dying to know. I want to know what happens if a vampire offers me soup.
One day, I'm going to meet a vampire, and he's going to offer me soup.
And I'm going to make the wrong call.
Right.
And I'm, damn it. and this is why I need a season two of Middleman.
Because I'm sure they would revisit that question.
Yes. I just want to give a shout out. They use a Chromeo song in the very first party, and I love that band. And there's not a lot of licensed music in this show. I assume that was an ABC Family. Anytime I hear licensed music in Middleman, it feels like an outside of the show decision to me. It always seems like, oh, you guys had a song on ABC Family this week. It got plugged into all the shows or something. And so I kind of want to know the story behind it, because it's odd to recognize a pop song that's wasn't thrown in for reference, that was just a contemporary song that year. And so, yeah, it kind of threw me off. But yeah, dying to know what to do when a vampire offers me soup.
I have a couple of things I wanted to mention. One, I really enjoyed their little talk in the car with the vampire trivia, and she mentions that she is a fan of Hammer movies with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, which I just love. And then the other interesting thing was I looked up the guy that played Renfield. Rob Nagel.
Yes.
He was in Buffy, actually. He had a minor role in Buffy for a few episodes. So I thought that was interesting. It was a Watcher, I think.
Yes, yes, Robson. He's one of the Watchers. Every once in a while on this show, I'll recognize somebody from the background. Mark Dacascos is on one of these episodes.
Right. I saw him in Brotherhood of the Wolf. That was
a
good movie.
Yeah, actually, we were laughing during recording of that episode that Mark Dacascos is one of those actors that you don't mean to look like you're an obsessive fan of, but the guy's in so many good things that, like, without following his career, you can accidentally end up with a Mark Dacascos collection of movies. Well, thanks again for being here and going over the episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, this is just such a fun show, and such a fun show to nerd out about with friends and to pick through and pick over. This show is so rewatchable for that.
And I'm going to go back and watch the rest of the series now that I've got my appetite whetted.
Cool. Well, hopefully we'll do that for everybody. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you. Boop.
The
Good Die Young is an independently run podcast produced by Les Weiler and hosted as part of the Permanent Record Network. We can be found on the web at thegooddieyoungtv.com. Les can be found doing weekly television commentary at www.thetvdudes.com. Thanks for listening.